Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey guys, welcome into another special edition podcast on the Denver Sports Podcast feed. We've kind of dropped in here and come in when there's something important to talk about, and obviously there's something important to talk about with the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant and his daughter and seven others. And a lot of people in our company and the Slack chat had a lot of things to say, and we thought, you know, let's just get together, get on the microphone, and let it flow. So joining me right now is Adam Mares, Andre Simone, Ali Monroy, Drew Kreisman, and Brendan Vogt. And I think we're just going to have a free-flowing conversation kind of about what Kobe meant and just processing this entire situation. So, Adam, I want to start with you. And you were in the arena yesterday when the news came down. So just take us through what it was like to learn inside a basketball arena.
Well, I think first and foremost, a moment and a day that I'll always remember. Like, without question, I think there's very few days, for my memory's terrible, there are very few days where I feel like I remember every little beat. I think that will be one of them. I actually broke the news to a handful of the players that came across my phone, threw it out to guys like Brendan and Matt Moore. We were sitting around a table, just like, guys, you see this? Like, what's going on? Right as it's happening, got up from my seat. I thought, okay, if this is real, I mean, we're talking 30 seconds after it dropped. If this is real, this is a moment, and I need to be out there and catching everybody. I go down the hallway. I show it to one of the Nuggets coaches, who then ropes in a couple of the players, and I'm basically breaking the news to them in the hallway. And it was just like, what? It just changed. It's like everything changed. The moment somebody got the news, everything changed. And then I go out on the arena, and you can just see Will Barton running, sprinting down the tunnel to the step on the court and tell Jamal Murray. Will Barton, a huge Kobe Bryant fan. Jamal Murray,
obviously,
huge Kobe Bryant fan. So the two of them kind of sharing that moment. And then it was just the weirdest thing. You just kind of sat there. We're sitting courtside, and you just kind of look around the arena, and you can see everybody receiving the information, just spreading literally person by person, phone by phone. And it was really eerie, and there was just a weight to it. I mean, immediate sort of like just weight over the entire arena that I'll never forget.
Yeah, we kind of got the news early, and you're right. You could sort of watch people learn this news, and you could almost judge by the mood folks were in and the looks on their faces had they learned yet. Mm-hmm. Because there was not one person in that arena that didn't have some relationship, personal or vicarious, to Kobe.
Yeah.
If you have a hand or even just a toe in basketball, you know who he is and what he means. So it was surreal. I grew up in New Jersey, and I remember on 9/11, I'm not comparing the scale of the tragedies, but I just remember the denial. I remember watching a community directly affected by this coming to terms with something that none of us could wrap our heads around. And in a weird way, this felt like a, within the sports world, a certain version of that. And I'll remember the two events similarly, if that makes sense.
Andre, how did you experience the news, and what was that like for
you? Well, and it was almost this weird phase of like, wait, is it real?
Yes.
Like, not wanting to believe it.
I think everybody felt that.
My buddy Definitely. In a group chat, and it's funny because now that I think about it, it's my buddy who would bring Kobe up in conversations to kind of get me going, you know. I love to debate, oh, you're overrating Kobe and all this stuff. And to find it out from him, my first reaction was to mess with him until I really reread it and was like, wait, sorry, what? And before I could even check with TMZ, he's sending me a screenshot of people verifying it. Our Slack starts to go off. It was surreal just being at home and consuming this information as my phone kind of started blowing up. Different people I talk sports with on a regular basis starting to hit me up and be like, hey, did you hear this? And it just felt like it took a while to for it to even really the reality to sink in. It was so surreal. I can't remember having a feeling like that in a really long time.
That's a great way to put it. It was a feeling I don't think I had felt before.
Yeah.
No.
I for sure hadn't either. And I think I used to always think whenever there was like a celebrity death, how am I going to feel when this is someone that I idolized or is part of my generation? And I think as far as I know, at least for me, this is the first one who I grew up with this person. You know, like I remember Michael Jackson, but that's a previous generation. Like this is our generation's one of the greatest stars of our generation. And I did not expect the feelings. I was, I remember like waking up and thinking like, man, there is nothing going on today. Like the Pro Bowl is a joke. There's some college basketball on, but that's about it. Had a really slow morning, figured I'd grab my guitar and just, you know, kind of mess around on a Sunday. And that's one of the few things I do where I'm not like connected. And so the second I set my guitar down, I opened up TweetDeck, and it was this, and that was the first thing on my timeline, like the actual release of the story. And you mentioned like not believing it was real. For me, looking back, I almost feel like that's like a coping mechanism in terms of like slowing down your mind and slowing down the process for you. It's like, this can't be real. And it almost gives you a chance to like process it a little more, and then Woj tweets and like, you're like, this is real, but at least for a second there, you're able to like start to believe like, okay, what if this is real? How am I going to feel about it? And it was the word surreal is the one that I think just comes back. As it's happening, you're just like, no, this can't be right.
Yeah. I was, what was interesting in my experience was the fact that I was with people who don't follow sports at all. And I heard the news and didn't believe it. I was like, there's no way. And needed the research by myself. So I stayed quiet. And I was in Portland with friends, and we were about to go on a hike. And they're like, Alec, come on, let's go. And I was just like, oh my God. As soon as Woj confirmed it, that's when it was like, oh my God, this is real. And I just said it out loud. And I was with one of my friends who her dad has idolized Kobe Bryant his entire life, made her idolize him. She just broke down bawling, like as if a family member had passed away. And she was like, why am I feeling this? She was so confused. She's like, I feel crazy. I don't know why this is affecting me so much, but this can't be real. And then with my friends who don't follow sports, they still knew who Kobe Bryant was for everything he did after his career. Like with the community and with his daughters, and they were in tears. And it was such a surreal moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, you know, I have a weird connection to this, too, because through music, there's a lot of musicians I've loved over the years that have died.
Yeah.
Chester Bennington was a really, really tragic one not that long ago that really shook both myself and my girlfriend. I mean, she bawled her eyes out when she found out about that. And I think there are a lot of people out there probably wondering, like, is it okay that I feel this way about a celebrity?
Yeah, totally. And 100%.
It absolutely is. Like, I also lost my father well before I should have. I've experienced a strange amount of death before death should have occurred. And it's okay to recognize that someone's play on the field or the court or someone's music or someone's work as an actor or a writer impacted your life and that their death would mean something to you. So, but this was a unique one for me as well, even as somebody who, you know, you guys kind of said I never felt like this before. I feel like I have a handful of times, but also that this was unique. There was something about the global of scale of it. We all remarked on, my beard is gone today. I went to get my haircut that day. And what do you think the hairdresser, who was not a sports fan, wanted to talk about?
Right.
It was the only news. He's a global icon.
Yeah.
And everyone in the world knows who he is.
I think it definitely started with that just like, oh my God, Kobe's gone. And then news came out that it was also Gianna, his daughter. And hit so many even more. Because she was his mini-me, and because, they like you all the times that you saw Gianna was like on a basketball court with her dad, courtside, watching the games, meeting the players, being at a soccer game, being at WNBA games. Like you always saw them connected, and then you could watch highlights of her playing, and she was so good. And like she and Kobe always talked about how people would come up to him and say like, oh, you need a son, you need a son. And that Gianna was like, no, like I'm going to take care of that legacy. And so hearing about that, I think just made it even, it just even, it hurt even more to know that a 13-year-old girl also passed away.
And not just a girl, but the father-daughter dynamic of it all, because, I mean, you're a father, you know, myself as well, I have two daughters, and the immediate thought is just like, you know, I think there's got to be, it's a chemical or something. When you have a kid, you just have this intense thing of protecting your children. Just like the last thing you ever want to happen is to have some, you know, your kids be in harm's way. So it was impossible to separate those two thoughts.
And and just quickly, and it wasn't just Kobe and his daughter. There was another family on there. There was another 13-year-old girl. There was 9 victims, and that it was just so terrible.
I cried a lot yesterday, I'll be honest. And at first it was about Kobe, but most of the rest of the day just thinking about like Gianna and like how they must have been feeling in that moment. Like I'm sure there's a moment there where, you know, like this isn't going to end well. Like thinking about how scared she must have been and those other girls, and what do you say? What does Kobe say? Like, what do you do? What do you, and like that, just the thought of that took me out quite a few times. And then you add in the fact that, like, I don't know, she was destined for not the same type of greatness, but like, you know, the WNBA community.
There was more to her story.
That's the thing. It's like
so much more.
Kobe lived, and there was a lot more to his story too. And I think he was going to do amazing things in this world. But like, he lived an amazing 41 years.
He lived a pretty incredible life. Yeah.
She had like so much. She had greatness ahead of her, and I think she had the power to connect the NBA community and the WNBA community, and she would have been the first star of that type of caliber. That's like, oh, that's Kobe's daughter. You know, everyone would have known who she was. People in the WNBA community would talk about Kobe as being the future commissioner of the WNBA. Yeah. Like, that's another, just there's so many layers to this. That's one where it's just like, man, there's such a big, that's going to be a huge hole for that community to fill.
We're talking about like the weirdness you feel when a celebrity dies. And you're like, well, I didn't know this person. Why do I feel sad? But I do think it's all encompassing with all of these feelings, and with Kobe in particular. I mean, you know, I was a huge Kobe fan. Obviously, I have this Kobe jersey on. Would never do a Laker jersey, so I had to do it. It was the only non-Laker jersey I could do. But, you know, obviously, I think everybody who I always talk about, I love the city of Denver, and I love basketball. So I love the Nuggets. You know, it's almost like in that order. But I love the game of basketball. I'm just so passionate about it and want to share it. And I think Kobe was a person that also truly loved the game of basketball, like even more so than myself, which it seems almost impossible. But and there was that whole aspect to it. But also, you know, his post playing career was way more interesting than I would have guessed it was going to be. I talked about this a little bit on the Locked On Nuggets podcast last night, but you know, he was a guy that I thought retired gracefully, which is rare, I think, for athletes of his caliber. There's so much of like, well, protect my legacy by putting everyone else down. Like, he, I think, actually got it. Like, he actually got that, okay, my story's written, it's done, period, end of sentence. But now my next role is to sort of prop up the next generation, and like, now I'm the parent raising the child, and this next generation of players is the child. And to my surprise, he was doing such a phenomenal job of that in my mind I pictured him as this ambassador to the game, like a Bill Russell, where he was going to be around for decades, and like, we'd always get Kobe's take on it, and he's always elevating the game in a way that the league needed. So for him to be gone, it felt like we lost, weirdly enough, not just an incredibly popular player, but somebody that had accepted the role in a way that I felt those types of players need to.
On both macro and micro scales, right? I mean, how many players have individual stories of Kobe? But then we also can sit here as fans of the game and can attest to his sort of general approach, right? And so it's not just like, oh, basketball players lost a fellow basketball player. I mean, the game lost an ambassador and an influencer. And like, anytime you lose a source of inspiration on that scale, it is more, you're not just mourning the loss of a person. You're mourning the loss of what they represented in the world and put out into the world.
And again, it's really not just basketball. During the Pro Bowl, you saw so many players running to report, like trying to confirm it. He affected so many people in every sport. A bunch of hockey players came out. The women's soccer came out. There's so many people, college basketball players, so many freaking people looked up to him, learned from him, and appreciated everything he was.
I think he invented a religion, a sports religion, that I know this sounds really like ridiculous, but it's true. Mamba mentality has some warts. There's some things about it that I think are actually ridiculous and maybe even counterproductive. But the one thing you have to give him, and that I think he affected all sports, especially basketball, but all sports, was this, like, yeah, we're getting paid so much money it doesn't even matter. Like, the numbers almost don't even matter anymore. But there's a responsibility there. Like, there's he was an obsessive worker. He was an obsessive competitor. And I think that in the shadow of him, after he had reached the heights and won 5 championships, I think every superstar athlete, especially in basketball, but even across it, kind of said, like, that's actually what I want to be. I don't want to – I don't care if I'm the, like – I think they all want to be famous. I want to be rich or whatever. But it's also, like, at the end of the day, that is who I want to be. The guy that is the hardest worker, the biggest winner, the most competitive, hyper-competitive guy. And that was infectious.
And that's the thing is, to me, not only does it transcend sports, it can go into everyone's everyday life. And I think that's another thing is, like, essentially the heart of Mamba mentality is – getting every ounce of your potential.
No,
right?
No excuses.
So
no,
you guys remember the movie Whiplash, right? And this came out and Kobe, like,
loved it.
and I think why part of what makes that movie so great, I've heard people, and I think Brendan's even talked about this before, like, that wasn't the point of the movie. I actually think the movie didn't have a point. I think the movie had an open-end interpretation, and a person like Kobe might look at it and go, yes, that's what it takes. Complete and total sacrifice and intensity. And another person might look at it and say,
that's
okay,
toxic.
You rob yourself of some humanity if you were trying to reach this level or whatever. But for Kobe, he accepted it. And I think when we're fans, we like when players accept an all-encompassing thing. They go beyond what we feel we ourselves are capable of. Yes, it inspires us to push ourselves, but we're also inspired when people do something that we think is impossible.
Well, and I think that's why he was so at peace with his retirement. You mentioned, like, a graceful retirement. You mentioned him transitioning into an ambassador role, and Bill Plaschke wrote in his column that, like, he had noticed that Kobe had softened a little bit about, like, his leg.
100% softened. This is what I mean about the post-retirement, where it was really surprising.
To me, that's because he felt like he got everything out of himself.
Yes.
He didn't feel like, man, I might have left something on the table. I might have left a few points here or there or a rebound. Like, he was at peace because I gave the game everything I possibly could have given it, and I didn't short myself at all by having an extra night out in L.A. late or anything like that. Like, you can be at peace when you don't have any regrets.
There's no alternative Kobe Bryant career.
Right.
We got the best version of Kobe.
And I think that's maybe even going back to the Whiplash sort of example is, at the end, I not say that the best course for every person is to, like, sacrifice everything and push yourself beyond the limit. But when somebody does, you can appreciate it a lot. And I think with Kobe, he might have worked too hard. He might have pushed too much. He might have been too much of a jerk. But we can appreciate the fact that the sacrifice it took for him to do what he did and the percentage of his potential he reached.
Go ahead.
With that mentality aspect, I think he carried it in everything. I mean, I find so much joy in laughing about him posting about getting frustrated with 6-year-olds or just these kids that he coached, because he was like, I can't turn it off. Like, I need them to give me all they've got because they need to grow up with that mentality. And yes, it can be sometimes pushing too hard in that, but, like, it just made it, that was just genuinely who he was as a person, that he couldn't even turn that off when it came to, like, children playing basketball.
He couldn't. They did an Instagram post a year ago with his his 9-year-old girl basketball team, where they're all pissed because they took 4th, and he's like, we don't smile for this. It's like, look, it's ridiculous. I wouldn't hold that to a standard. I'm not going to coach my girls that way, but maybe I'm soft. Yeah. But when a professional athlete does it, there's something about it that you go, wow, there is a human out there that pushed themselves to that limit.
But I think, go ahead. I think that's part of the heartbreaking element, though, of his post-playing career being cut short.
Oh,
because the humanity he was stripped of through all of these stories and these reputations, it was reintroduced to Kobe.
Oh,
and we were, I mean, there's been, I think Kobe Bryant is one of the ultimate case studies in us having to reevaluate our vicarious relationships and our understandings of celebrities. We do not know these people. We hear stories of people, and we build narratives in our head. And an interesting part of the Kobe story is that seemingly every 5 years we had learned something completely new, and I understood him completely differently. And that process has been cut short now is heartbreaking.
It's so true. And like, when you have these athletes, you know, especially when they're rival teams or they be like, you want to hate them, you know, like it's natural to say, I hate Tom Brady or I hate Kobe Bryant or whoever. And Kobe in that grace that you mentioned reached a place where like, you would have a pretty hard time trying to hate what he was doing after basketball.
Well, he'd kind of become everyone's guy. He was such a global icon. He was big for pushing the game in Southeast Asia and doing stuff in China. He was huge in Europe. I mean, he's kind of an adopted son in Italy and was doing stuff for the EuroLeague, what he was doing for the women's game. You know, he's on ESPN Plus breaking down, like, WNBA tape. Who's doing that? This is Kobe Bryant that's really trying to push this.
By the way,
in part, it's Gigi who unlocked that in him.
I do think having daughters had an extra side of it. I mean, you both can talk about that as fathers to daughters.
First of all, it's the
best. I
feel
like it changes. Fathers in general to any child, it changes the way you view and do things.
Yeah. The other part with Kobe that I find so fascinating, he was one of a kind, like one of one. And there's a lot of athletes that I think you can be like, oh, he's like this guy or he's like that. He's in this mold of superstar, that mold. Kobe was weird. Like he was such a unique person. And I think a lot of that is his upbringing and being in Italy and being in different places and bouncing around, having a famous father, whatever. He's a weird and unique personality. He doesn't fit the mold. There's not another player of his caliber that you would be like, oh yeah, that's a guy who doesn't really have friends. He's got a bunch of people who admire him and who he can interact with, but he doesn't. He prefers to be alone, speaks five languages.
That's really where him and MJ divided was post-career, right? MJ's gambling and smoking cigars and owning teams and ruining those teams. Kobe instead is becoming like an ambassador for the game.
And I think that's not a. By the way, this is not a coincidence. MJ, Kobe came in the heels of MJ.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no overlap there in terms of Kobe really wanted MJ to take him in and to be his boy. And I think over time that relationship established. But MJ didn't feel that responsibility. And I think a lot of those 90s and even early 2000 stars, for whatever reason, didn't feel that responsibility of, oh, this league that we benefited from, that we took so much from, now we owe it to sort of bolster up and make sure it's left in good hands. And I think Kobe and LeBron both have sort of learned that lesson. Because they both were sort of, I think, hurt by that generation of stars and said, we're not going to be that way.
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things about someone like Kobe Bryant is how, no matter how close or how far away it might be, everyone has a relationship with him and what you experience with him. So I just kind of wanted to go around because I think everyone sitting here probably has a different relationship with Kobe. Adam, I'll start with you. What was your experience like with Kobe?
I'm glad you asked this one because for me, more so than any other player, he was the guy that inspired me to become a perfect basketball player. I fell short. But he was the guy that, like, just a little bit. But he's the guy that, you know, when he did moves, they were technically sound. They were like, oh, he invented moves, but everything he did was just so perfect. One of my favorite videos, him working out with Hakeem. You guys all remember this 15 years ago when he hired Hakeem to teach him the post moves. When you watch the video, it's not like, check out this awesome move, okay, you do it. He's making little tiny micro movements and trying to like train his body so every inch is perfect. Every angle of his foot and his shoulder and everything is so timed. And it's like when you break it down, it's a science. It's like, okay, this move that looks so smooth and fluid is actually 100 micro movements that all require micro training. And you watch it and you just go, my God, this guy is obsessed. And me as a college basketball player, then even after that, when I just still loved the game and still wanted to get better, you watch those things and you're just so inspired to be like, man, that looks fun. He made the work part of becoming great fun
and cool
and just you were driven by his drive
and that attention to detail, right?
Attention
just
to
all
detail.
That skill. Yeah, Kobe, the more I think about it, the more he is kind of omnipresent throughout my basketball life, which was really kind of my first sporting love. I remember having some VHS recording of that 98 All-Star game with him and Jordan going head-to-head and how important that was and a lot of the first live NBA games I could see in Italy were in the early 2000s during that finals three-peat runs they had. And then, you know, Summers here when the whole scandal was going on and he became a rival that I wanted to beat so badly as a Nuggets fan, and yet he's one of those rivals that really almost the fact that you're able to compete on somewhat level footing almost legitimizes your fandom, that he's like, my father saw my Nuggets lose to Magic and the Showtime Lakers. Now I get to watch my Nuggets lose to Kobe and Phil's Lakers. You know, there's something, though, that it legitimizes you. It's we were part of basketball history in some way, too, and Kobe's really that touchstone.
There's a small group, by the way. I think for me, and this is going to piss a lot of the listeners off, there's only two. Kobe's one, where it's like, yeah, I hated the Lakers. I hated them, and like the Pepsi Center cheered him on, not just Lakers fans, but Nuggets fans cheered him on the other night because it was like, man, we respect you. We hate that dude, but you know what? We tip our hat. I think the other one, and it's going to piss a lot of people off, is Tom Brady. And this totally. Was very, very recently. Four championships in, I still hated him. It was like, no, he sucks and he's whatever. Eventually, you're just kind of like, no, this guy's, I mean, what can you say? He's good and you respect him. I'm going to boo him. I'm going to root against him. Kobe was one of two in that way.
Except Brady's like way more like punchable. I do respect Brady a lot, but like
Kobe's a good villain. I remember when he came out one time. He came out one time and they played the Darth Vader song when they introduced him, and it was the most cool thing ever.
That
I was just like,
so cool.
Oh yeah, he's Darth Vader, and he's like, that's right.
Yeah. Well, because it was Kobe against the world, even if that included his own teammates.
Yes, exactly. And you were going to bet on Kobe.
Yeah, times it did. That's true.
For me, I told this story on the DNVR Broncos podcast this morning, but I'll share it here. I think I was about 8 years old, and my sister came in, and I was watching TV, and she's like, hey, who's your favorite basketball player? And I was like, well, my favorite Nugget is Nick Van Axel. My favorite non-Nugget is Kobe Bryant. She's like, but who's your favorite? And I was like sitting there, and I was like, I know I'm supposed to say.
Yeah.
That's what I'm supposed to say. I was like, it's probably Kobe. And I didn't know why she was asking at the time. A couple weeks later, Christmas rolls around and I unwrap, you know, a brand new Kobe Bryant jersey. And like, I would have thought it was cool if I got a Nick Van Axel, but like, I felt like I was holding something like golden.
Yeah.
I was, it literally is gold.
Well,
and I was just like, man, like, it's Kobe. I put the jersey on right away, like, wanted to go shoot hoops. And the other funny thing is, I realized that if you cover up the B and the T in Bryant, it says Ryan. So when I would go play hoops with my friends, I would put athletic tape over the B and the T.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like my own, my own personal jersey. But, I mean, back then the Nuggets were so bad. And it was like,
true.
If you want to watch meaningful basketball, you got to watch something else. And so I watched the Nuggets games, and I loved the Nuggets. But when it came playoff time, I would watch the Lakers and watch Kobe. And then when the Nuggets got good, it changed everything, right? Because now you had an actual reason to hate Kobe. He's beating you in meaningful games. And it was one of those things where it's like, man, I want to hate him so bad. But when he does, you know, a fadeaway right in our eye, it's just like you can't help but just be like, wow, that's art.
Well, you love to hate him.
Yes.
And then he was doing that bottom jaw thing. Bottom jaw. He would flash the Lakers on
but
you.
But you know what?
Man.
You only do that if people can't shut you up.
Me.
You know what I mean?
Me.
Like, you do that stuff, you're vulnerable. He was fine with being completely vulnerable because that's how confident he was.
And you hated him because you didn't have anything else. You couldn't be like, well, my team's going to win. You know what I mean? Like, you had to hate him.
Yeah. You can hold him to 60 sometimes.
For me, my connection with him, he was born in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's right.
Knew where he went to high school. Knew he was a diehard Eagles fan. And so, of course, I saw him as a great, great basketball player. But when I was growing up, I definitely wasn't focused on basketball. But as I've grown, just seeing him post-career and just the way he's helped further, like, women's sports. And then I guess my connection with him would definitely be just, like, I loved watching him watch the Eagles. And, like, I tweeted out, like, I'm just – as a fan, like, you got to see him be a fan when the Eagles finally won their Super Bowl. And, like, everyone, like, Philadelphia was in tears from having that. Yeah. And like he had that same reaction as a fan, and the fact that he was able to feel that way as a fan, it's different when you're a player of a team, but he was able to feel that and celebrate and being holding his baby girl, like freaking out and like so happy.
The tear gas was also causing fans to cry, though. Like, to be fair, there was a couple things.
Okay. But
you want to talk about being humanized. That video, I think that's my favorite video of Kobe that's not on the court
smile.
Because he's exactly like one of us when our team wins a championship. And he just keeps on saying, we effing won the Super Bowl.
And his reaction was the same as like everyone. It was like, oh my God, like what is happening? And it's just like, I don't know. I watched that video a lot yesterday and was just really, it just brought joy to me that he was able to experience that. Everything he's done for women, like he's just brought more attention to women's basketball, which I think is so huge, and his love for his daughter and just like that father-daughter relationship and all of that. I just, that was more of where I learned my connection. He was an amazing basketball player, and I realized that as a kid, but it wasn't all basketball for me.
I just was going to say, what's crazy is that in that moment, it seems like his reaction is like ours, but what makes him this incredible superhuman person is that it wasn't. His reaction was to get back in the lab and run it all back, you know? And that's what I just, like the Bradys, the LeBrons, who is very much inspired by this from Kobe, they possess this commitment to, they achieve their dreams and get back in the lab. I mean, I think we all kind of understand the complacency that comes with getting where you want to be.
I think Kobe is somewhere between a Brady and a Saban. Like Saban, I don't think enjoys anything. I think when they win the title, he like maybe has like ice cream.
It's like a relief, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, we're back to work.
He's like, I'm gonna have a regular Coke instead of a Diet Coke.
Exactly.
Regular Coke.
I think Tom Brady probably seems like he enjoys himself a little bit. Kobe, I don't know. Maybe he has like an hour of fun before he gets back in the lab.
Yeah, you
probably. Did you have anything, Drew? Or?
I hated him. I mean, I rooted for him to lose every single basketball game he ever played in. If somebody would have bought me a Kobe Bryant jersey when I was 13, I'd have thrown it in the garbage can.
I was 8.
At 8, I'd have thrown it in the trash. It's funny you mentioned how bad the Nuggets were back then. So before that, I was a fan of a team called the Sacramento Kings. I don't know if you've heard of these.
They're not irrelevant anymore, right?
Do they still exist? I haven't watched in a while.
I haven't heard about them.
The Vlade Divac, Chris Webber, Peja Stojakovic, Bobby Jackson.
Mike Bibby.
To be fair, that's like one of the all-time most likable teams. Like that was
my adopted team. I loved them. So I have been tormented by Kobe Bryant my entire basketball watching life.
Yeah. Here.
I wanted him to lose every game, every time there was an argument, the smallest possible sliver of a statistic I could find to say that LeBron or Carmelo or Dwayne Wade was having a better season. I found it. I pointed it out. Kobe's overrated. That 1 year Melo was better in the clutch. You better believe my whole thing. But he was the measuring stick. Every single one of those years, it was always, no, this other guy that I've decided I like better this year, now he can take on
right.
Kobe.
Yeah.
And it was just like you said, you did love it. He was the greatest villain of all time. I never liked that guy. I didn't want him to win. I think, again, like I was talking about earlier, it's okay for people to people in Denver, Colorado to feel this way.
Did you love to hate him? Was he a worthy villain?
It wasn't until the end of his career. It's kind of like you were saying about with Tom Brady. The first several championships, I gave all the credit to Shaq.
Yeah,
because then he goes and wins in Miami with Dwayne Wade. Yeah. I was that guy.
Yeah.
Every possible thing you could think of to detract from Kobe. All the newspaper articles about it was Shaq, and then he couldn't be a leader with Pau Gasol, and he's calling out his teammates, and he can't win. That 1 year they missed the playoffs was one of the greatest years of my life. I'm telling you. But he was the best. He was the boss at the end of the video game. He was the guy that if you ever felt like some of my favorite memories as a sports fan of the 2009 Western Conference Finals, of the time the Nuggets hung with him. My dude hung with that dude.
Right, you know?
Like, that's how big it is. And so it wasn't really until later in his career I learned to kind of just respect and appreciate it. And I'll be honest, and you know, we've touched on it a couple of times and mentioned the words. There were times I really didn't like his personality. I did think he was too arrogant. I didn't like the stick in the jaw. I did take the scandal stuff and the fact that it happened in Colorado very personally and use all of that as more fuel to not like this person I was already predisposed to not like, and have all the justification in the world to not give him credit for things. But even as someone who felt that way and about very serious real world imperfections, I did stand at the end of the day. And it goes back to how you guys began it, with the way all these young basketball players or Ali's friend or the WNBA, and it's just so much more complicated than ever boiling down a person to one thing they've done in their life, or to five things they've done in their life. To even boil him down to being an NBA champion and an MVP is to undercut what he's achieved,
no doubt about it,
as a basketball player. And to, you know, get too much into his personal life one way or another is to miss a lot. As Brendan said, we don't know. The people are very complicated. Human beings are very, very
and
complicated.
And him, I think, even more so than most. And it's funny because right. we're, you know, the ultimate one of these was when George Steinbrenner died and everybody did their tributes. And it was kind of like, man, you're really digging for like a positive. you know, he did things his way. And it's like, okay, that's the best you could say about a guy. And I think with Kobe, there's a little bit of this. Like, we're all talking about the, because the things about him that were so unique and are so memorable leave a lasting impression. But to your point, he was an extremely flawed person, both as a basketball player and as a person. Yeah. And I think certainly I believe he evolved over time in some ways that I think were very positive. But even as a basketball player, there, we talk about this Mamba mentality. Well, there was a flip side to that. He was a bit obsessive and kind of a bad teammate for a lot of years.
Sure.
He actually probably should have won more championships given his talent. And maybe you can ask, he could have never had that talent unless he was a crazy person that limited him. So it's an interesting philosophical discussion. But, you know, there is other sides to this, of course, with him and his history.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned the sexual assault case, and I think we have a very unique perspective on that, having lived in Colorado during that time, where all of a sudden, you know, Eagle Colorado was in an international spotlight. And I don't think we need to get into relitigating this case, but for me, I like to look on see the light side of things. And you talk about people being complicated, and he was flawed. And I don't know what happened that night, and I don't know anything about that. But when I look at the fact that the way he was when he left this world gives me the feeling that people can change for the better. And he once called a ref extremely derogatory term towards gay people.
Right.
That's not okay. But he was working with gay organizations and LGBTQ.
And earnestly, again, like, there's a lot of people that, oh, I got caught with this, donate $50,000, move on. But with Kobe, he actually really made an effort to become sort of an ambassador to the league. Pro athletes can be very homophobic, even in 2020. And I think for him, it would have been very easy to do something that we've seen even local athletes do, which is just kind of, oh, my bad, sorry, here's a donation. He actually took strides to...
Right.
I felt that way, yeah, completely. And so I'm not in any way trying to glorify this as like a redemption story or anything like that.
Or to undermine how important the Eagle Colorado situation was. I mean, it was a thing that is unfortunate for him, a part of his legacy and a part of his story that he'll never erase and he should never be erased.
Absolutely. And so for me, that was what I thought about yesterday, is just like, I think it's very important as humans to have hope that people can change for the better. And for me, that was something that I thought of yesterday, is like, man, that was a really bad thing that happened regardless. But it does seem like maybe he's an example of a person who could have gotten better over time.
Well, I'm not sure any other superstar, especially from that era, comes out of that the way he did. I mean, with the kind of scrutiny he had, that it's all going on in that season where they didn't win the title the year before. They've got Peyton and Karl Malone they just added. They lose to the no-name, like, Bad Boys Pistons 2.0.
Turns out they were good, but yeah.
Right. And then still is able to transition into becoming the Black Mamba. He changes his number. He goes on this tear in 2006, which is really when I gained a ton of respect for him
as
a player.
That 2006 season is
It's unbelievable.
It's just such. But even like James Harden is scoring a bunch of points.
Sure, sure.
That season is iconic.
Oh,
the
yeah.
way it happened, the methodology, the like right. intent. He didn't. I don't think Kobe enjoyed 2006. He almost approached that game like a maniac, or that season.
Well, and yet it was like a joy to go to the box score every day and be like, oh, how many did he put up today? Is he going to outscore the Mavs on his own again in three quarters? Is he going to go off for 81? Is he going to average 45 in an entire week? I mean, the things he was doing were just insane.
Yeah.
And this transition from basically being Shaq's like Scotty to no, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to be the most lethal perimeter scorer you've ever seen since MJ. And to really do that, that was a joy to watch.
I think of him as one of the like now textbook cases or examples of no one is any one thing. We are different things to different people. We are defined differently by different actions, right? I mean, you look at the myriad reactions to his passing yesterday from people speaking up about this alleged assault, which is reasonable, which as they should, I think, to people mourning someone to had a real positive impact in their life. My point being, like, it's a good reminder that that no one thing defines a person entirely. And that Kobe Bryant will always be involved in that case. But I don't.
And it's part of his eulogy because of it. Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that Kobe Bryant always has to be remembered that way, or that he wasn't capable of more, or didn't at times give this world more, or didn't try to grow. And I do think those notions in general are kind of lost in this day and age sometimes. And so I almost look at this as kind of like an important example.
And I think it again goes to showing of everyone can mourn in different ways. You can mourn and believe that something else happened that night, but still see the changes and growth that happened. You can feel sad for this victim that had to deal with all of that type of stuff. And you can still feel that way, and you can be angry. Everyone mourns in different ways, but at the end of the day, this person left a lasting impression on hundreds of thousands of people.
Or we don't define icons by morality, right?
Exactly.
He was iconic, and that includes the good and the bad.
There's one thing I want to say. Well, there's a couple quick things I want to say on this. One is I just want to make it very obvious and clear, and maybe it goes without saying, but that it is important to acknowledge that there are people who are very conflicted about this, and particularly the type of glorification that, quite honestly, we're doing here today.
Sure.
And I think that that's totally fair, right? When 90% of the world wants to come out and talk about how great a person is, and survivors of sexual assault might not appreciate that kind of glorification. And I don't think there's anything that any of us are going to be able to say that's going to make that dynamic any better as sports people essentially here. But it at least has to be acknowledged that this conversation is really, really hard for some people, and that's fair. And those people need to be respected, I think. But, you know, to Brendan's point, it kind of reminds me of another example. You know, the Disney Plus thing just launched. I'm a big Disney guy. And there's an interesting example of a person we know, quite frankly, was had racist tendencies. But that doesn't mean that he hasn't also brought joy and love into the hearts of millions. And while there's never a direct comparison here, I think it's always important to remember, you know, things are very complicated. I think Kobe Bryant was also in many ways a symbol of sometimes the way our society just treats rich and powerful men.
Oh,
and that's
for sure.
And something
no
we
doubt.
Need to think about.
Yes.
All of us together, that this wasn't, that even the incident in Eagle, Colorado is not just a Kobe Bryant thing, that it's something
yes.
that happens in a lot of places still to this day. It's a societal thing. And it's something we need to have better conversations about, I think. And there's only so much we can do as sports people to enter those conversations. But I think it's just important to, you know, to get back to how you guys were talking about the way he responded to it. Was he shined light on that. He started talking about it can be very easy when you're making a whole lot of money and everybody loves you to suddenly not hear the word no for 7 years in your life. And we all as a society have to dig in and make sure that that thing is understood, not just for one person, of one bad thing that happened, one confusing, terrible thing that happened. It's a very complicated, I think, community-wide thing. And it does happen in sports. We all know, you know, that it happens in sports out there a lot. These very confusing, very weird power dynamic relationships. And I think we can all learn from the Kobe Bryant situation, and we should try to. We should try to learn a lesson from it and try to make – it sounds horrible to say make a positive of it, but I think you understand
sure.
what I mean.
A lot of people are entitled to a wide range of emotions.
Definitely.
A lot of people.
And I think when you look at it in today's day and age, like, who knows how that trial would have been if it happened in now because of the amount of – it's not enough, but it's still so much better than it was, the amount of power that females are starting to feel to talk about it, and that there will be a change. And we've still got a lot of work to do in our society, but it's getting there, it's improving, and it's finally feels like it's moving.
It's a super difficult conversation, and I appreciate you guys for speaking openly and honestly about it, because I think it's really hard to be right in these type of conversations.
Impossible.
I think you're right. It's impossible. So thank you guys for being honest there. Anything else that we think we need to discuss here as it relates to Kobe?
I think we just touched on the gravity of it. I mean, it's funny. We talked about this for an hour now, but it just is one of those things where he was just so influential and so iconic that him being gone, it's not an understatement to say the sport of basketball will be different than what it would have been had he not passed away in that crash.
It's been an hour already. I feel like it's been like 10 minutes.
I know.
It's crazy.
Crazy. One point I just wanted to get in here, and I'm sorry if I'm shoehorning this, but I found it particularly surreal yesterday because it was maybe our first great global example, or at least even just domestic in this country, grand example of like the concept of truth and the ideas of reporting are in a precarious and interesting place. We're at a time where things that don't happen get confirmed, where we wait for confirmations of confirmations.
Literally, and celebrities have tweeted out many times before,
I'm
not dead.
And so it was just, I don't know, it was a rough day for journalism. A lot of people
really
were rushing to be wrong. And as a result, I just think a lot of people's emotional confusion was exacerbated by this dynamic of like, we're trying to come to terms with what's likely, but we're holding out hope that everyone's wrong. And I don't know. I just found that to be just kind of an interesting place, doing it in real time on Twitter in this day and age.
It's a weird place we are in journalism where, you know, I saw people say like, oh, well, TMZ rushed to be right for a couple of clicks. And now I'm like, well, you're downplaying that. I mean, this is probably maybe the biggest story in a really long time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like there's a huge ethical question there of, do you need to be first or does his family need to be first to find out about this? And I think the answer to that question is very, very obvious. His family needed to know before any of us did, before any of the world did. And it's so it's hard to reckon with until you're in the situation and you have to make that decision. And I think a lot of decisions are made based on business and money. And I think that was really lost yesterday. But as journalists all sitting here, I think, you know, we don't cover stuff with quite as much gravity as some other people, but I think it was an important reminder of being first is not worth the reward of the penalty is of being wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just, if you have a lead and someone else beats you to it and you didn't get it because you were making sure you were right, that hurts for a second. But what you can't come back from is just being flat out wrong and scaring people and you know, really messing with the emotions of a really sensitive situation like this.
If you're first, no one will remember. If you're wrong, no one will forget.
Yeah.
Can I have one last question? Maybe this can be the way to get out. Do you think the sports world, maybe sports media, the way fans engage with athletes will change at all because of this? Because I think he's the most high-profile athlete to pass away in this fashion. Do you think maybe it makes people a little softer? Or do you think this is a thing we all grieve for a week, and then next week we're like, oh, I hope so-and-so freaking dies? Not us. I'm just saying the fans.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I hope it changes things. I I can't predict whatsoever, but I do think that this was so much in the zeitgeist, and the mess up in particular was so much. No one missed it. ABC messed up.
I don't even mean that.
Like, I mean, literally the way we as human beings on social media, they were just a news organization that did it. Plenty of individuals rushed to all kinds of,
but I'm
just
not
way ahead of time conclusions. You know what I mean? I think this is going to be a turning point for. I hope it's going to be a turning point for discussing all kinds of things, whether it be sports or politics and social media, of pumping the brakes just a tiny bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like really not, whether it's jumping to conclusions or being the first person to have the take. Like there are people telling jokes, you know, it's just
that's
like,
not
it's not all going to go away, but I do think that it's going to become much more a part of at least the national consciousness, that there's a responsibility to speaking in a public platform.
But I even mean, you know, LeBron's another one of my all-time favorite athletes. And I remember back in 2010 how many people had written the story of his legacy. And it was like, okay, that's who he is, you know, whatever. And it's like ridiculous. We're 10 years later. He's still at the top of his game. And there's more to be appreciated. And I think with Kobe, you know, statistically – he's not as great as Michael Jordan. I believe he's not as great anyway as LeBron or whatever. And I think there's a lot of people that sort of like failed to enjoy him. And it's just this rush to be like, look, we all have our favorites and our least favorites. But I wonder if this is one of those ones where like he's gone now. And I wonder if there's this little bit of like, man, did I not appreciate this really fun athlete? Like, what am I doing talking about how his effective field goal percentage isn't as high as
It feels optimistic, though, Adam, to be honest.
I agree.
You know, because what took us to get us to this point was actual tragedy. And I just think that that'll probably stay the case, you know?
I think it'll have a marginal impact. I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think the internet was such a new thing, and social media was such a new thing, that we're only a decade into it, decade and a half if you want to get real crazy. And I think we've all sort of like learned as a society, we've collectively learned like, oh, there's some like real dangerous tendencies that it sucks us into. And I'm not saying this death will be the thing that changes it. But I do wonder if there'll be a little bit of perspective going forward of, you know what, maybe I dislike this guy. He's my enemy. But I appreciate more athletes, I guess.
I think there's a chance that some people will have that perspective. I'd love to believe that as a society we'll start saying, hey, let's, you know, see the full story here, or look at the nuances that exist. Like, nuance is so gone in 2020. A person can't be one thing and another thing. But
more about appreciation is really what I'm getting at. Do you enjoy sports? I think it's like a lot of people are passionate about sports, but 90% of the passion is hatred and disdain.
But what I think here is that the people who loved Kobe, the people who were fighting for his honor before this happened, are going to dig their heels in even further. But I do think there's some people who aren't there who are going to look and say, man, I just got to stop and smell the roses for a second and appreciate, like, I'm watching LeBron James, and 50 years from now, hopefully we're talking about, you know, LeBron and how he ranks against some other guy. But like, I say this a lot. I try to not hate athletes, because one day I hope that my grandchild says, oh man, what was it like watching LeBron James? And I don't want to have to be like, well, I was kind of bitter about it the whole time because I was trying to say Kobe was better than him, and so I kind of just tried to put down all of his accomplishments all the time. Like I wanted to be able to say, man, it was incredible. You've never seen a human specimen like this. And then you add the work into his craft, and then, you know, like,
Russell Westbrook, like, yeah, triple doubles are overrated, kid. Like,
yeah.
It's like, no, I got to watch this dude do it. That's incredible.
About two of those rebounds per game weren't that legit. Like,
ask Steven Adams
just
about
get right
it.
The
He was assist hunting towards the end of game.
That's almost a weird thing with these guys as they're able to prolong their careers, and Kobe's really at the forefront of that, and be part of our lives for 20 years. You can't write the narrative on a guy like that over a 20-year career and try to pigeonhole it into one thing.
Can I tell you something?
The career arc's going to be varied.
I think about this a lot. Yeah, athletes have 20 years. That means I have two more cycles in me. I'm 36. I've got 40 years here, like, you know, like before. So I think about this sometimes. It's a little ominous where I'm like, okay, Zion, and then whoever comes after him, then I'm done.
End the pod on some existential dread.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah. With that, I want to also just talk about how how social media has affected the way that the world can mourn all together about certain things.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, humans crave being connected to other humans. And in today's day and age, we all look back on Kobe's posts and feel like we knew him because we saw his everyday life through Instagram, through Twitter. We heard his thoughts. It wasn't like a few years ago or years ago where you only saw them when they were talking in interviews on TV. Like, you only felt this closeness or this interaction in other ways. Social media has a lot of faults in it, but it also has a lot of positives, and the fact that we can connect to so many people in so many different ways. And then when something like this happens, I think this is one of the biggest things that collectively the world on social media has been able to mourn together. There's so many pictures, there's so much art, so many people have used this to express themselves creatively and created beautiful videos, graphics, art, and just, and we all get to experience that and watch that together.
We all get to share it. Yeah,
we all get to share it. And I think that's a really great thing that social media brings now.
Almost every day we're experiencing the negative sides of social media.
Yeah.
And it's such a big part of our lives now. And we talk about it a lot, how negative it can be. Yesterday was an incredible example of what we can do when we're just trying to bring to light good things. Mm. And, you know, graphic designers were designing incredible graphics. Artists were drawing beautiful pictures. Writers were putting together amazing stories. You know,
people were
putting together incredible perspectives. But everyone was coming together. And I thought, I said this earlier, it was like a worldwide funeral. We were all there together, sharing memories, experiencing it, and it was cool. I think I'm naive to say we got away from the negativity, because I'm sure there was a lot of negativity. But from my perspective, it was like, wow, I just went a whole day without seeing something just negative on the timeline. And I thought that was pretty special.
Yeah.
And with that, I think we're going to wrap things up again. Thanks for sharing your guys' emotions with me and everyone here. I think it's been an emotional couple of days, and you know, for discussing some difficult topics. So appreciate you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.